Hey everybody, welcome back to another amazing episode of the best darn show on the internet, the Oversharon Show. We're joined today with a guest, by a guest. I don't know, Sharon, you're the grammar Nazi. We have a guest today I'm very excited about. But before we get into that, I'm going to read today's quote, and then Sharon is going to pull a card. So today's quote is from Robert Adams. And it is, the only freedom we've got is not to react to anything, but to turn within and know the truth. And again, that's by Robert Adams.
And the truth shall set you free.
And the truth shall set you free. Martin Luther King, right? Or something.
Yeah. Turning within. Absolutely. The only thing I see wrong with the quote is the grammar. it's not we've got, it's we have. the only freedom we have.
Well, maybe you know, this guy Robert Adams is, you know, from an area where they, I don't know how to say it, maybe he's black. No, but anyway,
I don't blame him. It's all good.
Yeah, the knowledge in there, it's kind of like sometimes you have to change it for the people so they'll understand it. But I do love that, because it really speaks to a lot of what I've been trying to work on these past few years, where whatever happens is meant to be. Whatever happens, I just have to realize it's meant to be. That's what was going to happen. It happened. And now it's just up to me to accept it or to not accept it. And I really feel like free will, the essence of free will, and the only kind of part of free will that you'll always have is to choose how you feel about something. Even if you're imprisoned into jail, you still have the choice to choose how you're going to feel about that. So that's why I really like, that's why I like that quote.
Well, I pulled a card, Ace of Cups.
Ooh.
What?
Yeah. Water emotions.
Pin you to the screen. Wow. Yeah, that's a good, I like this, the idea of the hand coming out of the clouds. There's so many ways I think symbolically it can be interpreted, but one of the ways that I look at it is just like, this is coming to kind of from like source, right? Or God or the all, or however you want to look at it. It's like, here's this new thing. It's an overflowing cup. Now, what are you going to do with it? You know, are you going to dump it, or are you going to use it? What's going to happen? So.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Lovely. It has lily pads in the water, and my middle name's Lily.
Ooh.
Oh, look at that.
You get the correlation to the lotus flower with the lilies.
Yes, mm-hmm. You do.
Born in the mud, comes up through the water, reaches the sun. Like the rebirth kind of cycle. Oh. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Beautiful.
Well, we have a returning guest, as everyone can probably tell, Christopher Gardner. We call him Topher.
What?
And Topher had posted something in his chat that I really resonated with. And I sent him a note and I said, you know, really thankful that you posted this. I really enjoyed it. Really resonated with me. So he's like, you know what? I'd like to talk about that sometime. So I said, come back on. So here he is. And what we want to do in this episode is kind of get a chronology of how he went through his journey. I think we've asked him about his journey on the first episode we did with him, but this is more of how he got to the knowledge that he has now, and how he continues to experience moments of epiphanies of I knew this all this time, but boom, now it makes sense because of XYZ. So that is stuff that we'll talk about. And so we will get started. Topher, please welcome. Tell us how you're doing.
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Back in the wonderful land of Missouri right now on my farm. We had a really good cold snap for the last few days, so chopped a ton of firewood. Anytime I get to start a fire, you know, a nice controlled fire, I'm happy. Building lots of rocket mass heaters and rocket stoves. I'm doing a demo this weekend for a local rocket mass heating company. So prepping for that, getting all my wood ready, and it's just so much fun this time of year with all the leaves on the ground. Of course, when I see the leaves, I'm just thinking future biochar. So I'm sort of that recycling, reused nerd. But yeah, things are going really well.
Love it. So how do you want to get started with telling us the story of you?
Well, do you want to go into your specific questions around what I posted, or do you want me just to like run and gun with the chronology of I guess you'd say exposure?
I would say let's run and gun first with your chronology. This way we can kind of build a picture of how you arrived at your worldview. And okay. Then along the way, if you don't cover the questions or points we want to talk about, I could just kind of throw them in there after that.
Okay. I, as a little kid, I was very sick. By little kid, meaning like less than 4 years old. I pretty much was a sympath. There's empaths, which, you know, empathetically connect with people. I was more of a sympath. I would sympathetically connect with people, and especially my parents. And my parents, even though they really loved me, they had a lot of problems with each other. I think my body just kind of took that on. And at a soul level, I decided not to be around. And I flatlined from, what's it called? Asphyxiation. I had become allergic to everything that I'd ever eaten. And so I flatlined for, I think, close to 5 minutes. And when I was in the higher planes, it was my great grandmother that I had never known. I had come to find out in the future, like a few years after that event, that was my grandmother. At the time, as a 4-year-old, I had no idea who it was. But when I was in the higher planes, you know, she told me, she's like, it's not your time. And I didn't want to leave because it was the first time I wasn't in pain. And she let me hear my mother. And in hearing my mother cry, I dropped back into my body. And so from a very young age, I just had this kind of like, never really a fear of death. Because, you know, as I got older, as a 4-year-old, like my consciousness wasn't really aware of what happened. I had like in retrospect, I was learning what that event was. And so my family was very open to, I guess you would say, extracurricular type of energies. And I think because I had gone through that experience as a little one, I was kind of open to those types of energy. My wife thinks I'm constantly tripping on DMT, which, you know, I had read Talbot's books, you know, in my early 20s. And it but what people were talking about was psychedelic experiences didn't sound all that foreign to me. And learning about, I don't know if this is true or not, but they call DMT the God particle or whatever. And your body, your pineal gland floods your system with it when you die. Maybe that was it. But I always had a very weird relationship with light. And to this day, I see, I'll never know how another person sees things. But from what I understand, I see things very, very differently than most people. My vision is highly, highly pixelated. The best way I could explain it is if you were like to turn up the brightness on the old TV screens and you could like see each pixel. I see that in 3 dimensions, and each pixel is a kaleidoscope. And for me to actually see things as solid, I actually have to consciously make that happen.
Is this like you see this all the time?
All the time.
You see like this all
like
the
right
time.
Now, looking at the computer screen, I could literally just go into 2D pixelation, like no problem. So this allows me to really be able to see things in my imagination very well. As a little kid, I was much more of an artist than I was an athlete. Like I really loved art. I could draw anything mechanical, like any boy growing up in the 80s. I would draw guns and spaceships and, you know, tanks and cars, like anything that was mechanical, I could draw, and I could draw it at a very, very high level. And like, I could watch a movie and then like draw the space station in it. Like I could see it in my mind's eye and draw it. And so I ended up gaining some notoriety for that because I guess I was in fifth grade. I won the national competition in the United States for drawing the robot in Short Circuit, Johnny Five.
Yeah.
And my whole school got to see the premiere of Short Circuit because I won that competition. And so I could just draw. And to this day, I can draw whatever I want. That's actually one of my professions, is I draw homes for people and then build them. But I mainly just draw. Like I'll probably be drawing to the end of my days. But anyway, that kind of like took me as like this, like really, like, I guess you would say I was like a very sensitive kid and very aware of my surroundings, but in a not so healthy way. I was overly, I had to build lots of, like, I guess you'd say spiritual calluses, because I was too sympathetic. I didn't have boundaries. And that's what sympathy means. When you go into sympathy with somebody, you are feeling exactly what they're feeling. And so when I say I'm a sympath, that's what I mean. You have empaths that can relate to what another person feels. And then you have sympaths that can be empathetic, but they can feel exactly what somebody feels. So I've been really annoying to most people in my life because when I'm around them, I can feel them. Like no matter what their words they're saying or how they're trying to be, I'm just like, oh, I can feel, like I'm running your energy. So,
can I ask a quick question? Does
sure.
that work over, like, over the phone or over like us now, or anything like that, over internet? Or is it just when someone's energy is around you physically?
It's more with a proximity, like with a physical proximity. There is a barrier with electronics. And it's mainly because now I don't want that. You know, when I was younger, I couldn't control it.
Mm.
And so all the years of being a massage therapist, all the years of actually interacting with people, and now that I'm a family man, I actually have very discreet boundaries that I've put in place. Like, okay, actually learning how to, I think that's part of what got me into construction and sacred geometry, other than just being exposed to it as a child from my father. It's a huge, if you were to look at my astrology, a huge part of my life is to learn how to build boundaries, because I came into this life like just open. And so I've had to get better at that. And to this day, I find myself slipping into the old patterns every once in a while with certain people, where I can fall into sympathy with them, and I'll be like, whoa, wait, that's not mine. That's not mine.
Mm.
And that's sort of why I've, you know, like in my podcast, I've, you know, really resonated with people like Jerry Marzinski and all these other folks that actually teach that the majority of these input energies that we hear internally are not ours. I had some very direct experiences with that, especially when I used to channel, and I turned that off. Like I haven't channeled since I was 30 years old, because that leaves a vacuum, and nature abhors a vacuum. So anyway, just like getting back to like the progression was I was very artistic, and then I got into really liking girls around puberty. And I noticed that girls really gravitated, the girls that I liked gravitated more towards athletes. So I was like, goal. My goal is girls. So I just played sports, and that accomplished exactly what I wanted it to. And I ended up being pretty proficient in athletics. My senior year in high school, I played in the largest classification in the state of Florida in three different sports. And I was a all state in all three. So I was Florida Scholar Athlete of the Year. And that was like a big deal back then. I don't know what it's like now. I ended up getting a scholarship to go and play college football at Michigan State. I chose Michigan State because I got to play Notre Dame every year and wax them. So that made me very happy. I hated Notre Dame and I wanted to kill them. So I had some vengeful hubris when I was a young man. And so as I was in athletics, well, the greatest thing about athletics was it taught me a lot about economics and finance at my university, because when you're a starter for a college football team that, you know, brings in $100 million a year to your university, you are essentially like, you're not, at that time they didn't pay players, but you are learning what the corporate world is like. It's very performance oriented. You perform, you're in. You don't perform, you're out. All the fluffiness that might like be in the mind around high stakes, high reward corporate life, that was all annihilated for me by age 18. And thank goodness, because I had zero. I wasn't projecting onto the world that there was anything in the corporate world that would satisfy me. Like, you guys in high school, did you ever take those psychological assessments?
I can't even remember, honestly. I know what you're talking about, though. Like, it's like a career path thing or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. They'll tell you what type of personality you are and what career you should go into. And I was mortified because I was told that I should be a forest ranger. They were right.
That's hilarious. I used to want to be a forest ranger when I was in high school. I was thinking about studying forestry, but then I joined the Marine Corps. I got plenty of forest.
Right. No, like for me, it was like literally like I thought at that age I was going to be president of the United States. Like I was like hyper, hyper motivated. And very, very certain of myself. And yeah, that drive or whatever was very, it was that callousness that I told you I needed to kind of create so that I wouldn't actually have to feel. So I went towards that hyper side of like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be the highest in the land. I can do that. So all that was just faux. Like none of that was really me. When I was in college and in playing, I played at a very high level at that time. And then I got exposed to meditation and it blew my mind. A friend, I was at an NFL ID camp and one of the coaches there, he was doing, I think, a self-realization fellowship meditation. And he guided me in a meditation one night in our room. And I just went, like, I was gone on the astral plane.
Nice.
Like, I was like, what? When I came back into my body, I was just like, what was that? Because it was so exceptionally vivid for me. It was more vivid than life. like what we call physical life. And and it was so easy for me to go into. And it was like so much better than regular life that when I went back to practice and I started doing all these things, I literally had I had zero motivation for football. I had zero motivation for school. Like all of that was so mundane to me. It was just like, and so going into my senior year, I ended up taking a yoga class because I had all these electives that I had to finish, and I took yoga. So that was 1997. And all of a sudden, like after a month, I didn't have any pain in my back. And I got kicked out of my church.
Because were taking yoga?
No, I got kicked out of my church because I was trying to solve a lot of the contradictions that I was finding between the Old and New Testament. And I was pretty devout. Like I was a born again Christian when I was a junior, and it took them about a year to throw me out because I would go on Wednesday nights and Saturdays, Wednesday night and Sundays. And the Wednesday night was more of like for the university students. And that's when I had the opportunity to ask questions. And I call him a professor. My pastor just ended up just getting, he just told me he couldn't handle me in the congregation. And so between yoga and then being vengeful, like as I already stated, I had a vengeful side, especially in beating Notre Dame. I went and started studying all these things from the East. And then my coach that I did that meditation with, he was like, here, check out Chit Nan Han. Here, read the Tao, you know, do these things. And I was like, I was now spending eight to 10 hours a day reading Eastern philosophy. And then I found myself reading Buddha's words and his Four Noble Truths. And I had a satori, just for those of you that don't know, it's where you have like a glimpse of your greater self. It's not, the identity of you is not locked to the body and what the body has experienced. The satori, you get to see the big S.
This actually might be a good place really to break in, because I was going to ask you about ego and how you define ego. And I think that kind of has something to do with it, because I feel like I've heard this explained before, but it's like an ego dissolving moment where this, like you were saying, the self that you are here doesn't exist. It's more of your higher self. But a lot of people get tripped up with that whole thing. And then, you know, everybody wants to talk about like killing the ego and like you got to destroy your ego, which I feel like is a mistake also.
Well, to say that you have to destroy your ego means that it exists in the first place. So I've heard this from multiple vantage points, and I tend to agree with it, is that the only problem that there is identification. So the number one problem that I've had, and I don't mean to project this onto other people, but it's pretty much the only problem that I've seen, is people identifying with what they're not. So the satori was very much like my death experience as a kid. It's like all of a sudden you're in a completely different venue, but you're still you. But that you isn't it isn't the body. It isn't this story. So like the whole hermetic principle that all is mind is like, yeah, it is. Absolutely. That is true. And like even Buddha, like the when I was reading Buddha's words, what blew me away was the one of the noble truths was, he's like, no thing is real. And the way I read it was nothing is reality. So like now our identification, like even right now, you can feel the mind slowing down. Like we identify with all these things as that, as being what's real. But the definition of something that's real is something that's permanent. Yet everything that is out there is impermanent. So we're actually identifying with something that isn't as it, and we're redefining it. Like we are Satan. We are the one that is inverting reality. Because if words mean something, and I think they do, and I know Sharon, you really, that you hold fast to this, like there is grammar, there, you know, something means something. So like, so eternity is always here and now. And that's like the Tao. The Tao is like literally like, okay, eternity is here. But you can't, the second you try and project and say it's this or it's this or it's this, now you're trying to make it a thing, and everything is temporal. If it's temporal, it's not permanent. It's not eternal. And eternity is eternal. So you're always like a step too slow in actually expressing divinity. Because the words and the timing of things is never, it's never quick enough to catch it, and it never will be. And that's why I think I've always gravitated towards like high level athletes or high level performers, is because no matter how high level of an athlete or performer is, they all get into flow state. And flow state, you're not there doing it. It just happens. Perfection happens through you. As much as that body can be perfect, it is perfect in the flow state. In the flow state, that extra energy that comes in, you didn't sponsor that. That's eternity that's flowing through you. And that eternal river that runs through you at that moment, you do something that you, your ego, and by ego, to answer your question, is just wrong identification. That's all it is. So it doesn't actually exist. It's like saying a bad shadow. Like, does the shadow even exist if there's light? No. Like, all the ego is just, it's just incorrect identification. That's it. Like, so to destroy it is like making it real, is to say, oh, I'm doing this, or no. Incorrect. And that, like, getting into the chronology, like when I dive into things, I go pretty deep. And so I was exposed to a lot of Eastern thought. You get to the core of Eastern thought, it's a Vedanta Advaita, which is the path of non-duality. And it's the practical side of the Tao. Like, how do you actually live the Tao? And their whole thing is like, actually find the I, like find that which is having the experience. And so this is something I say a lot, because I've tried to really identify what the I is, which is once again a fool's errand, because the I once again isn't a thing. You know, so the way my mind reconciled it, the way I came back into, I guess you would say, regular worldly life, was I came to the full and utter recognition, and this goes all the way back to the beginning of being a sympath, is like, I am my environment. I am that. Because like, if you were like standing on the sun as a plasma ball, you would be plasma. Whatever you're around, guess what? Out of all the kajillions of variables that are available in an infinite universe, what is actually putting you in the position that you're in right there? You are that. That is you. And then the attention changes, it changes. And this brings up tons and tons of fun questions about, like, what is real? Guess what? Nothing that we're actually perceiving. And this really jars people when it comes to attachments. Because I have a daughter that I love. I have a wife that I love. And in no way, shape, or form am I saying, oh, they're not real. You know, they are sentient beings. I have a golden retriever I love. I have a wiener dog I love. I have all these things. I have friends that I love. They are other subjective, I guess you would say, intrusions into non-reality from God's perspective. And they are wholly unique. And they do their own thing. So I just have a temporal experience of them. And as long as I get to have a temporal experience with them, I'm going to enjoy them and love them up as much as I can. But am I delusional to think that that is the greatest of the great? No. And am I content to be experiencing what is so? Absolutely. So one of my good friends, he's gone the shamanic route and he's done gallons upon gallons upon gallons of ayahuasca. Like, this is somebody that has tested the boundaries of reality with psychedelics. And anybody that is earnest in their truth seeking comes to the full recognition that things are temporal. Mm-hmm. They matter as long as those things are, like, whatever that temporal element is. And then they don't. And that's just as it is. And can the being actually just be without the need or the impulse or the incorrect identification to go down some certain path that winds them up into more identification? So that's sort of the path that I've been on. When I came into full recognition of an acceptance of what I am, I let go of all the Eastern bullshit of what I was being taught to identify with. And I was like, you know what? I actually do I don't like pillow sitting. I don't like, you know, sitting there looking, gazing at my navel. I got into building domes because I'd always been intrigued with building domes. And I got really into the dynamic flow state of water. So, like, all the study behind Victor Schauberger and Wilhelm Reich and John Worrell Keeley, all these dudes, like, really turned me on right at my first Saturn return. And I just jumped, you know, head first into that pool of, like, how do we make these titans of the early 20th century, how do we make their work relevant now? And from that Saturn return till now, that's really been my life's work. And all the while still utilizing and still practicing everything that I do with the body work, because one informs the other. Like, I was talking to this woman on the airplane on my last flight, and she's like, what do you do? And I'm like, what do I do? And then I was just like, you know what? I'm a sculptor. Like, if I was to just distill it all down, I sculpt because I'm always using my hands when I build, and I'm always using my hands when I sculpt bodies, like when I reform a body. So, like, I'm a sculptor. That's what I am. And, like, even mentally, I sculpt people. Like, I help the mind kind of get the right configuration. So, yeah, that's been, like, the primary driver for the last 18 years.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer. I've ever since leaving the workplace and people ask me, you know, what do you do? I just say, I be, I am. I just, you know, because what do? I just be. Or girl, sometimes you just I've said, I don't do, which means I don't work.
Yeah.
And she hosts the Over Sharon show too. You make sure to tell people that.
That's right. The one hostess thing, with the mostest.
Yeah, exactly. Something that popped up in my head was you were saying all this stuff about identification and, you know, who are we really and what's reality. This is something Sharon and I talked about on an episode where we talked about how there's like different levels of this stuff, because the New Age movement, they have some good things to say, but when it goes to putting it into practice, I feel like that's where they kind of mess up. So they have people believing, you know, well, we're all one and everything's great and you just have to meditate all day. Whereas Sharon and I kind of pinpointed these different levels. Like there's the material realm and then there's the spiritual realm. So, you know, just because we're all one and when somebody dies, they go to a better place probably, or just, you know, it's not as terrible as most people think, doesn't mean that you can go around just killing people because everything's great and it's okay. Right. So it really has more to do with how you feel on the inside, kind of like that quote in the beginning that I was talking about with accepting things when they happen. So you could know that we're all one, but you can have a guy coming at you with a knife and it doesn't mean you have to let him stab you. You could still, you know, practice self-defense, but in your mind, instead of rage squirting or whatever, when you have to kill this person or, you know, whatever it is you have to do with self-defense, you could just be thinking yourself, you know, this guy's probably just a lost soul. Like he probably just had a terrible upbringing and you can kind of empathize with him. And I'm not saying I'm like at that level by any means or whatever, but these are the kind of concepts I think that trip people up, because a lot of people say, oh, so you mean nothing's real? Then it doesn't matter. Then what it doesn't even matter what I do. And then they're like, oh, then you can't point to any truth. And, you know, they'll say, they'll call you all these different types of names. So that's something I just wanted to kind of throw in there for people that might not exactly understand, you know, these different levels.
And it's hard to explain things like this to people who aren't really, quote, there yet. So it's kind of like Jesus said, it has to be revealed to you by the Holy Spirit. So you can't just like explain something to somebody and they get it. Like this stuff, you have to have kind of gotten to a place where you're spiritually mature and you can comprehend these topics. Because like if somebody asks me, I'm going to just be like, you know what? I've had to go through a lot of things to get here. I don't quite know how to explain it to you to a place where you'll get what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that we're talking about this, Chris's journey, because it's exactly what we're doing. So he's kind of like highlighting his path. So then people can look at it and maybe choose their own path, but then they could, you know, maybe figure out how he had some of these epiphanies.
Yeah, like it's crazy because when I was in the like quote unquote New Age world, I was in it as an operations director, right? So I was an operations director for an ashram. So I read a good 200 books from different philosophers. And because I really love philosophy.
Mm.
And so I was reading all these books. I was reading Eastern and Western thought and like really diving in. And I love like some of the Eastern thought, like some of the like people like Nisargadatta Maharaj, Osho, who like his earlier books were Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. That was his name. Like he was like India's debate champion for 3 years in a row as a 16-year-old. Like he was a fucking master logician. Like most people just know him from now his Netflix BS, you know, but like the man's mind before he got all like hopped up on drugs and stuff like that was like par excellence. If you guys love the Tao Te Ching, read Finger Pointing to the Moon from Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. Like that's one of the most beautiful books that has ever been written. And so I'm reading all these dudes and I'm getting what they're laying down on a philosophical level. But then I'm being told in the ashram, like during satsang and all this other stuff, that I just need to sit for hours and hours and hours. and meditate. And I'm like, this is bullshit. And so when I was released from that, when I got to see the hypocrisy in it and all that, like I never felt like I was actually like in that world because I didn't like it. Like it wasn't like I was there on the business end and philosophical end. I wasn't there on the like the practical end, like actually believing the BS. And so when I got out of it and I really started to give, when I was in the ashram, astrology was always poo-pooed. Like they shit on astrology. The guru made fun of it, all this stuff. And I was like, actually, no, that's much more accurate than any of your BS. And so I really started to study it because I just decided, I was like, you know what? The things that I'm naturally inclined, the gifts that I've been given, that's God saying, here, you're curious in astrology, you're curious in domes, you're curious in this, you're curious in that. I gave you those curiosities, go for it. And I did. And it's mind blowing because and in such a funny way, all the fucking crap that the new age world wants to talk about, like whether like, oh, if none of this is real, then why? You have no fucking say in it anyway. Shut up. When you actually really start to see that the luminaries are just like a, like if you have a dimple on your cheek or you have a freckle on your hand, that's all the luminaries out there are to you. They're just a characteristic of you. So like for you to not deny that little freckle on your hand is stupid. The freckles on your hand, you have no say in it. It's not like it's something out there that has some remote influence that might do something. No, if you have black hair, you have fucking black hair. Shut up. That's why, like, now I don't do astrology. I do profiling. I tell people straight up, I'm like, I do celestic profiling. This isn't like something that's like way out there that might have some influence and like, oh, do I choose it or do I not choose it? You'll get to a deep enough level where it doesn't matter who's really choosing it. Who is the I am? And one of the best philosophers, and I'll call him a philosopher, I won't call him a guru because he never wanted the guru moniker. People gave it to him, was a man named Ramana Maharshi. He died in 1952. And he had these people that would, they literally built an ashram around him. Like he didn't have anything to do with it. Like he was just like, oh, okay, you guys are going to do what you're going to do. Cause he knew at a very deep level, like people said to him once, they go like, well, what if I'm doing the wrong path? What if none of this is real, then what am I going to do? And he said quite plainly, and this is like on par with what Jesus would say. He said, if God didn't want it to happen, do you think it could happen? And if you wanted something to happen that God didn't want to happen, do you think you could make it happen? Boom. Exactly. End of fucking story.
Done.
Stop the presses. Shut up. Your ego has no say. None. Remember, the ego is wrong identification. It's the bad shadow. It doesn't fucking exist. And the ego is asking, what if I make the bad choice? You had no choice to begin with. You think you had a choice. It's the subjective, we are the subjective experiencer of God's objective projection. Like, let that like hit. So you're God. You're like, okay, I'm getting bored. Boom, creation. Which is all right now. Well, God doesn't want to look at that through one vantage point. How does God, who's omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. How does God actually have a novel experience? He creates subjective beings. Ta-da! We're all having a very unique experience. I will never experience what Sharon experiences. Brandon, I'll never experience what you experience. Even though we're fire dragons, we're the best.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 76ers.
Yeah, all you other busters, you don't know.
But, you don't know about 1976.
You don't know about 76. Bicentennial, bitches.
That's right.
So we all, even if we were standing next to each other and we were those twins that were attached at the shoulder, we still are seeing everything at a different angle. We all have different shapes. We're all different arrays. We pick up information differently. We're always transducing that information differently. It's genius. God isn't having a unitary experience of his creation. He's having a multipolar experience of his creation. And the humbling aspect of it is, guess what? We do have free will, but it's only one fucking choice. Do you submit to that truth or not?
Yeah, exactly. It just goes back to what I was saying about acceptance, right? Do you accept what's going on around you, or are you suffering, right? Are you not accepting it and therefore you're suffering?
Yeah, because if God didn't want what's happening right in front of you to happen, do you think it could happen?
Yep, that's what we talk about when we talk about like concepts like Satan or the devil or whatever. Like, you know, it's just another creation of God at the end of the day, right? It's just it's all part of the plan, if you will.
My wife has taken it a step further. Like, she's of the mind, being a triple Pisces, that in like this is the fall. Like, when you're experiencing the temporal realm, you have fallen. Heaven is what's real. The eternal realm is what's real.
Absolutely.
And there's only one choice. So you go, okay, am I attached? Am I attached to all these like temporal things? And like, yeah, this is it. This is my jam. And a lot of people don't understand attachment styles. You could have a fear attachment style. So you could be like scared to lose something. And that's an attachment style, right? And so, is that it? Or are you trusting? Do you trust? Can you rest in God? If you can rest in God, guess what? You actually elevate into eternity. Because trust is that eternal state. Because if you fully trusted, like 100%, and I'm not there yet, I know I'm not enlightened, I know I'm not a sage. I get very agitated and scared and I did the wrong identification and all that. And I'm hard on myself about that. But like, in reality, if I trusted like Jesus did, and Jesus literally was like, do the fucking birds in the field worry? do the worms, like,
this.
Do the worms think about, you know, what they're going to eat? Don't you think your heavenly Father, you know, doesn't provide for you even more so? Like, yes, Jesus, absolutely. I'm just a fucking doofus. Like, and it's really that simple. It's simple. It's very hard. I won't even hold that for myself because I don't want to hold that for myself. But that's the core of, I guess you would say, the spiritual endeavor is to come to that place of just, can you rest in God's can you rest in God? Like, can you actually rest in that space and just be in that trust and be the trust?
Yep. I've contemplated on that so much because it's just a topic that I love. We've talked about it before. I brought it up on the show, but the whole, like the quote, the birds, you know, Jesus feeds the birds, clothes them, clothes the flowers. You know, are they sitting there like spinning wool to to clothe themselves and mm-hmm. all these things. No, he provides. God provides.
Mm-hmm.
It just, yeah. Do you trust, like you said?
Yeah.
And to expand upon that a little further, you might even say, well, if you want to point to animals, sometimes people have dogs or cats that get anxious and have all these issues and stuff. And this is something that blew my mind. But if you think about it, it's domestic animals, right, that have these. Well, I'm sure animals in nature might have issues, too. But domestic animals, because they've been domesticated, they kind of manifest these certain patterns that they get stuck in. And I even noticed it with my cats. And it's the same thing with people, right? So if you're a kind of a domesticated person, and when I say that, I mean like a slave, but really just a slave to your own mind and your own terrible mind or whatever, or are you a master over your own mind? And it's that same kind of principle, because when you start to learn to become a master of your own mind, this trust is inherent with that too. It comes in. And like you said, Christopher, it's not always there, right? Sometimes you get fear or something happens or whatever. But if you could have that as something you default back to, just as in meditation, when you're sitting on the pillow or however you meditate, when your mind wanders, you realize it and then you just bring it back. It's the same thing when your faith wanders or when you start to wander from the path and you have fear. If you can realize that's what you're doing in the moment and bring it back, it's really like working out. You're working out a spiritual muscle, I think, at the end of the day. And that other thing you said about being hard on yourself, boy, that's so true. Because when you learn these things, you're like, all right, this is how I have to be now. This is the perfect way to be. I got to be that way. And then when you fall short, nobody's harder than yourself on you. You're like your hardest critic. And that's something I had to learn. So that's why sometimes I just, you know, I'll do a thing where sometimes I'll try to be eating a certain way, but then once in a while I'm like, you know what, let's just eat pizza. Like, let's just do it. Like, because why not? We're here to experience things. And why am I going to be hard on myself? If I'm going to go out and like eat pizza, or if I'm going to do something I'm not supposed to do or whatever, I'm going to enjoy it and enjoy it fully instead of beating myself up over it. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. These days I'm just like, I am an eternal being.
Yeah.
What can harm me? Nothing can harm me. So, you know, God bless it. Whatever it is
best.
I eat, get whatever gets on my body or touches my skin. You know what? I'm doing my best, you know? And sometimes, hey, yeah, have that pizza. Like, yeah. I'm going to eat it. It's going to taste good. I'm going to enjoy this life.
Yeah, I had a very, very strong ascetic 2 years when I was in my Raja yoga path, and I was not fun to be around. And I had a condo on the ocean in Florida where I didn't have to turn the AC on for 2 years because it had a southeast exposure. So I had the front mm-hmm. door open and I had the back sliding glass open. So I always had the breeze moving through, and I was on the fifth story. I would ride my bike to my yoga classes, and then I would drive in to my massage clients, and I did 2 sessions a day of yoga, and I was probably the cleanest I'd ever been. I did all of my parasite cleansing, and then I did a Kachiri for a month, which is an Ayurvedic balancing treatment where I ate mung dal 3 times a day. And mung dal is like one of the worst tasting things in the world, but it's very bland. Yeah, it's like porridge. It's like a bean porridge, but it's horrible. And you know, all of my conditioning around needing salt and sugar and all that stuff, like all the addictions to caffeine, all of it just came up. And by week 2 of the mung dal, I was clean. And then with all the exercise I was doing, all the fresh air I was breathing, I was like, But I noticed in the setting of South Florida in like 2000, 2001, I couldn't be around anyone. Like nobody.
You couldn't go to that organic restaurant that serves local food. Farm to table.
No, it wasn't that. It was like literally like there was a relativity thing. It's all because frequency is location. This is before I ever got into physics, because I'm I always back into what I end up getting into. This is like, I was Mr. Raja Yogi. I was trying to develop, you know, siddhis, which are powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was around people that had extra capabilities, and I wanted to get to their level. And I was just, you know, I took my professional athlete, you know, piss and vinegar, and I just threw it into Raja Yoga. And it was working. But the problem was I was like, I actually like people. And I noticed, like, I wasn't relative to people. And it wasn't just that I wasn't relative to people with bad habits. Like, literally no one in South Florida, save like one or two people, I could actually have consistent correspondence with when I was at that vibration. It was so evident. And I was like, oh, okay. Mm. And so I started to pollute my system again. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I could see it on multiple levels. I was like, you know, like, it's the Chiron thing. You know, the Chiron is the wounded healer archetype. Like, whatever you're wounded from, you learn from it, and then you can teach others about it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, in my life, I've been wounded and hurt and done so many different things in so many different ways that I'm very accessible to talk to because I can almost relate to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's a fun thing, right? And so because now my model of existence is more inclusive, it's just like, I understand, like, having a clean body allows for a clean mind, and there's a certain navigation that can occur with that. I totally am not poo-pooing that at all. And there's also buffering is not all that bad. Like, I look at every negative habit, like, let's just say negative physical habit, as actually being very appropriate given the surroundings. After massaging people and looking at people's, you know, celestics, like actually looking at their luminaries, it's so obvious why you buffer. Like, eating a bunch of pizza numbs you to a certain extent that allows you to be in specific environments or allows you to be around certain people. Like, I've noticed in my life, if I'm traveling somewhere immediately, like, especially if I'm about to travel to like Central America, like the day before I travel to Central America, somehow, some way I'll be hearing Spanish being spoken, where for like a month, I won't hear Spanish at all. But then in my environment, it's the transition. And so it's so obvious, because if God wants something to happen, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There are these buffers that are put there. And if you know how to read the buffers and read the tacos, like, you can surf, you can navigate and be like, ah, you can kind of have like a quasi precognition to what's about to happen.
Mm. Yeah. And it's also, I think it's, about balance too, and non-attachment too. You know, yeah, I could have that pizza, but it doesn't mean I have to have pizza all the time, every day, every night, you know?
Because it's wrong identification. The truth of the matter is that the person that has to have the pizza all the time, they're identified with the pizza eater.
And somebody who's not eating pizza all the time, and they're telling everybody, I'm gluten-free and I'm not eating pizza, that's who they're identifying with, right? They're the non-pizza eater.
Dude, I have massaged more fucking Instagram diet people than you could shake a stick at. Living in Costa Rica as long as I did, dude, everybody had a retreat down there. Everybody would have their shtick, and it'd just be like, within 15, 20 minutes of massaging these people, it was just like, they're a fucking wreck.
Yeah.
They're a wreck. Shut up.
Attachments.
You're a 26-year-old person. You're not allowed to be a life coach.
Exactly.
Like, go away. Like, you could literally do anything. You can do anything, and your body's going to look great because you, yes. Your age. shut up. And like, I like for 15 years, I worked, what was it? The four top retreat centers in Costa Rica, massaging people. I got to massage some very famous people. Nobody, let's put it this way. Everybody's shit stinks. Everybody, you know, puts their pants on one leg at a time. My coaches used to say this all the time growing up, and it's so true. Do not idolize anybody, how gimmicky their marketing campaigns are. It's the people that have it on lock, the people that really have it. You will never know their name.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not trying to sell it to somebody, shout it from the hilltops.
And guess what? They have no compulsion to tell you anything.
Exactly.
When you've been the happiest.
Those who speak don't know. Those who know don't speak.
Exactly. And those who do, no, what is it? Those who can't do, teach. Those who can't teach, profess. It's hilarious, man. The happiest people, the people that I know in my life that like have their shit together, nobody's ever going to know about them. Ever. Unless there is like some sort of God's will, which you can see in the luminaries, you know, like certain people, like they in their luminaries, they are absolutely meant to be seen. And then there's others that aren't. And that's another thing is like you gain so much compassion in actually seeing, like we're all really wired differently. So to like cast like one, you know, swath, like, no. God does not want to be bored. So God made us all differently. He wants that subjective observation to be completely different. He wants to see creation from every crazy weird vantage point that's possible.
Yeah. Love it. So did you keep telling us about your chronology? Did you finish with that?
I kind of hop around a little bit.
Okay. Great.
So I guess
that's the oversharing show. We're just oversharing.
There we go. A little slightly tangential. So I guess, so I moved to Costa Rica at age 30, my Saturn return. What? And that was awesome because I was flattened. My Saturn return was crazy strong. Lost all my money. Lost a best friend to a psychotic break. And I felt I didn't have a rudder. And then that's when I really kind of decided, you know what? The only thing that I could really give my attention to at that moment was studying water. Because I'm now in a land that's full of water and I have this curiosity around water. And so I lived on a farm that had spring water. I was showering with this unit called an EWO unit from Austria. So I had like this pristine water always on my body and in my body. And then probably about 6 months into that, my pineal gland popped. I'd gone through like a 6 month long deparasiting phase, which was really brutal. I had a flesh eating parasite called, down there, they call it papillomoia. I think in the States they call it leishmaniasis. But it got into my lungs. And so I got subjected to every single parasite cleansing thing other than turpentine at the time. And I ended up doing electrotherapy, but it was electrotherapy on a scalar level. There was this machine called a life machine. And this was the life machine before it got sold to a much larger conglomerate. This was like, there wasn't that many of them out there. And I did 7 days of this thing. And so I'm studying water. Parasites are coming out of my system. My pineal gland pops. And then like all of a sudden I could access thoughts. So a lot of my young life, I could see where I was extremely angry young man, and the anger was essentially, there was a frustration that I was feeling because I couldn't access. Like I knew something was right there, but I couldn't access it. From a mental perspective, there was like something that was like, I couldn't get it. And so I'd get so frustrated with myself. And then as soon as the pineal gland popped, like, and I'm assuming that's what it was, because I've heard other people describe it, but I felt a pop in the middle of my brain. My ex-wife actually heard it because we were doing yoga on the sun deck. It was like, sense. Pop. And she's like, what was that? And then all of a sudden I felt like I gained like 20 IQ points, and I could actually access my thoughts. I could access long form thought. And from that point on, I just dove into everything with a flow state of water, flow state of fluids, I should say, flow state of fluids. And that brought me back to my love of domes. And I learned how to make two different types of domes. One is a beehive dome, which is like a lancet arch dome. And the other is a hemispherical dome, which is what most people know of domes. And when you put those two shapes together, you come up with an egg shape. And because I was going to build egg-shaped water tanks, a la Schauberger. And Schauberger was teaching me hermetics because I ended up channeling Schauberger, because at that time I was still doing channeling, and I didn't feel like it was like a true channel. I think it was more my projection, because it was so important to me. Usually like with channeling and remote viewing, you have to be neutral. And I wasn't neutral. I was just like, I so wanted to like get the inner secrets from him. But that was the level of devotion that I had to that. And so I learned how to build the Lancet Arch domes first. I went to CalEarth University and then did my practicum in Costa Rica and built these big dome homes. And I was very frustrating because I didn't like being a contractor. I was never trained to be a contractor. And I still to this day don't think I'm good at it, because I'm not profit oriented. I think a lot of my frustration, okay. I think a lot of my frustration would be alleviated if I just like tripled my price, because then the frustration would be worth it to me. I just got into like, the best way of saying it is flow dynamics. I don't know if you guys know Emily Moyer or not. Like, do you ever listen to Emily Moyer?
I think I just heard the one where she was on your show, but that was several months ago or whenever that was out.
So Emily is like an incredible athlete. She was a gymnast, but she's like really into like the electronic dance music, but like back, like the good stuff, like the
old stuff. Yeah.
And she likes some newer people, but like she and I really resonate because we like the same type of rave music. And it's like, you know, like you will really vibe with somebody if you can dance with them, like if you can, like, you know, the whole thing. And like she and I vibe, and we see a lot of things the same way, because whatever that tune is, whatever that vibration is, we both share a kinship with that. And I lost my train of thought of like why I brought her up specifically. What were we talking right before Emily?
You were talking about Schauberger and channeling Schauberger.
Egg-shaped domes and then, or egg-shaped water thing.
Oh, contractor, being a contractor and not liking having to do all that stuff.
Triple. Yeah. I lost my thread in that. Anyway, like with flow state, that's probably the best way of saying it, is like studying fluid dynamics was very akin to actually studying flow state in people. And so, would you get into a what's known as a sympathetic resonance, you are in flow state. And so learning how to do that with structures, actually learning how to put and build a structure that's in sympathetic resonance with its surroundings became very important to me, because the more I built and experienced what this realm is, whenever you have resonance, you have more energy. And the only problem that I see us having is a lack of energy. That's it. We're in structures that like kind of, lower our vibe. We eat things that lower our vibe. Like all these things just kind of like act as like parasitic things on an energy level. And yeah, I was talking something about the life machine though. Now I'm frustrated.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because the life machine had to do with sympathetic resonance on a scalar level. And then I brought her up right after that.
Was it because of sympathetic resonance when you're dancing and flow when you're dancing with somebody?
Yeah, but I lost the specific thread with her with that. So just to finish the note on that life machine. So I was exposed to scalar physics. And scalar physics is essentially sympathetic vibratory physics. That's what it is. And because it cured me of papillomoia, the leishmaniasis, I instantly started to study what this vibrational pattern, like what is the nature of vibration? And it was really kind of cool because for so long meditating, what are you doing in meditation? You're noise canceling. You're literally canceling vibration. And if you're not canceling vibration, what you're doing is you're getting to that witnessing awareness that is pre-vibratory. Like you're behind it. Like I say this all the time to people is like everything that's ever happened to you has happened in front of you. Do you get that, Sharon?
I not really.
Because women don't get this. Men get it because men have more proprioception. The spatial awareness of men is different because we're like the hunter-gatherers. But whenever I bring this up to women, they all do this, and then I ask them, "Do you understand what I'm saying?" They're like, "No."
Not quite.
Okay, so check it out. Whatever you're experiencing, whatever you're experiencing, it's in front of your awareness. Your awareness, like another way of saying it is nothing has ever happened behind your awareness. So even when you're aware of something behind you, supposedly back there, it's still in front of your awareness. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Now, it has that been your experience?
I need more like examples to give me a make
Well,
me
think
think of
about it.
something.
It's not something I can give you an example of. Another way I could say it is, has anything ever happened behind you?
I mean, I guess I would say no.
But think about it. Has it? Like, what's your natural inclination? Because this is what will orient you. This is how you will know. This is how you can pick up what somebody actually orients themselves to. If they're oriented to the body, as the body being the vector of who they are as the I am.
Oh, I see what you mean now. I see that.
Shit, my dog just ran behind me. Of course, things happen behind me all the time.
Right.
I'm on a globe spinning at, 24,000 miles per hour, man. I'm fucking going, dude.
Better slow
It's
down.
happening, right?
Right. I get it now. It's the I am that sees everything. That's the awareness. It sees everything no matter where it happens.
And
With the little I.
in the I am, there's nothing that's ever been behind the I am. Ever. Cannot. Everything is.
Right. It's the great consciousness, the great awareness, the greater.
So now I'll have fun over the next few days. Just find your orientation. proprioceptively. For you, those of you out there that don't know, like, use your body, like, use your sensorial apparatus, which is the body, as the vector of, okay, this is the axis mundi. But now, understand, for you to be aware of the axis mundi, if you're aware of the axis mundi, it's actually in front of you.
It's like being one of those Waymo cars that has all the cameras around it and it sees everything around it, right?
No, I don't see everything around me.
I'm just saying the awareness does.
No, the awareness does not.
Okay, so
this is even weirder.
So go ahead.
It's so much simpler than that. That's why you can never tell the fish that it's wet. That's why, like, 99.9999999% of humans incorrectly identify, have an ego. We've already established the ego isn't real. All the ego is incorrect identification. That's all it is. The reason why we don't know that we're wet is because we're always wet. The reason why we don't know that we're eternal is because we're always eternal. And like I brought up Raman Maharshi before, is like people were trying to make this shit so complicated. And I love the dude because he was just like, contemplate this after you've mastered eating, pooping. He actually said excreting. I'll be more crass. Pooping. And sleeping. And people would come back to him years later. Oh, I've mastered eating, excreting, and pooping. And sleeping. He goes, really? Are you there when you're asleep? Mind blown. Well, yeah, but aren't you sometimes somebody else than who you're identified with as it right now? Yeah. Well, who are you then? Like, if you are you when you're asleep, but yet you're identified as something else, what's the identification mechanism? Who are you? Who am I? That was the whole practice. Atmavichara was the practice, or is the practice, of who am I? So the way I've simplified it, because you can get in a solipsistic, you know, mental positive feedback loop with that questioning. Because I'm dynamic in the way my stars are, is like I spatially relate to things. Not everybody spatially relates. You might not spatially relate, Sharon. You didn't get the joke, man. Come on, Sharon. You're so dry over there. I see Brandon like smiling. No,
sometimes things go like this a lot.
So in that's what proprioception means. It's to spatially relate. And I noticed that that's a little bit easier for men to spatially relate. So when you're doing, let's say, the Atmavichara process, but you're doing it from a spatial perspective, you'll recognize your sensorial apparatus has a locus, and it's right here. It's essentially the eye. Like if somebody was to ask you, like, who are you? Point to who you are. You wouldn't go, here I am.
You point to your chest.
You go like this. Yeah. Most you don't go, here I am. People go, no, I'm here. And if you could feel it, like I think it was even Jesus, is somewhere in the Bible, is like the fool's heart is on the left and the wise man's heart is on the right. That's because in yoga, the Shishumna, which is the axis mundi, is this energetic tether that tethers you to heaven, to eternity. But it comes up through the head and then it anchors down into the spiritual heart. This is the
like
center.
An ankh?
Yeah. Yeah, if you're to do a side profile, yeah, that's a great, that's actually an incredible insight, because just like an Ankh, there's a flat line, and that flat line is the horizon. I've been writing a book called Flatline Horizon. Oh, excuse me, it's called Blue Line Horizon. And it's about that the horizon is your heart. Like, there is this imminent thing. And the Ankh, if you look at it, is this loop with a flat line through the middle of it. That's wonderful. That's a great insight, Sharon.
Well, you went like that coming back. So to me, it looked like an Ankh.
That's perfect. So that anchoring in the right side, like, that's what you would normally point to as being self, as like, that's me. But when you become aware of that, what is that that's aware of that? That's what I'm saying. Nothing has ever been behind you. Ever. You can look in any direction. Awareness only sees forward. Eternity is omnipresent. And in omnipresence, there is not a backwards. It's very interesting.
So earlier, before you said that, you had said something was behind something. Can you explain what you meant by that?
No, that's the joke, is that we project that there's something behind this. So, like, here's I. Like, I'm saying, okay, this is my body, and I'm aware of my body. I, me, this is Topher, me, I. But for me to be aware of I is actually in front of my awareness.
Ramdas talks about this a little bit. I think Sharon might relate, because we both listened to this audiobook, but he was talking about one of the first times he had a psychedelic experience, and he started to go into non-identification, and he kind of disappeared. Like, he thought he was on a couch, but then all of a sudden he wasn't there. Like, these aren't, you know, this hands aren't mine, these feet aren't mine, all this stuff. And he kept going back to, what am I really? I'm just a witnesser, you know. And he had a moment where he's about to call a bad trip, because he's like, I'm not even here. But then a voice in his head was like, well, then who's this? Who's minding this
exactly
right now? Right. Like, what's going on back there? Who's this witnesser that's witnessing all this? And I feel like, go ahead, that's what you're talking about, right?
Which gets exactly back to the first hermetic principle, that all is mine.
All is mine.
And then gets back to Buddha saying, wait, nothing is real.
Yeah.
No thing is real.
No thing is exactly.
Even this quote unquote I, but wait, there is the eternal that has this I in front of it. In the Bible, it is you know, the name of God, I am that I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is like, that's like doubling down. That's like saying, You can't identify a thing with this. There isn't a thing that can identify. God is eternal. It's an eternal happening. It's not a temporal happening. And somebody like Jesus, who's the Son of God is that. Like, we all have the capacity, because we all have that sponsorship. And that's exactly what Jesus said. He said, what I have done, you shall do, and even more.
Greater works.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the kingdom of heaven is within you.
Absolutely.
It's within you. It's not without you. It's not out there. It's not like some fucking thing that's going to, like, come down in a cube. Like, come on, guys. And that lets you know the level of identification that a being is at. You really get to understand. Go ahead.
I was going to say the Holy Spirit is within you. You know, it's not God as some like external being out there in some realm or above you. It's within you.
Precisely. And all of us that have been in any of these healing modalities or have had to work with people in a healing way, you know, you can't do anything for anyone else.
Yep.
You cannot. You can never cast pearls before swine. And that's why the people that
save someone.
No, there isn't somebody else that can do it for you. Like, they cannot, they will not. Like, and the funny thing is, the creditors I've met in my life, they do not do shit for anyone else unless that person comes to them in utter humility and capacity, low dose. Then there's a transference, because then there's an earnest reciprocity. And that is the way this whole fucking thing works. That's actually great. That'd be a great punk band name. Earnest Reciprocity.
There you go. Write that down.
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, this we were talking about this on a few shows recently, where we're talking about the only thing that maybe you can do for somebody to wake them up is give them a near-death experience. So we were like, we should start a business where we give people near-death experiences.
Dude, that's why I love Wim Hof. I really think Wim Hof came on the scene freezing niggers in the water. He was giving them real baptism. Yeah. I bet you back in the day, the real baptism wasn't here a little dunk of water. Sprinkle. Oh, they were fucking killing fools.
Yeah.
It was just like the movie.
Exactly.
Near drownings or freezings or what or something.
Exactly. Why? Like the movie... The show OA, the original OA, to my wife and I, was like one of the best shows ever made. What was that psychopath doing to those people? He was killing them and then reviving them. Killing them and reviving them. Killing them. He was literally baptizing them in water. Did you either of you see the show?
I don't think so. It's called OA.
Like, dude!
The letter A?
You have to watch it, and then we have to come back and do another show on it.
All right.
It's called The OA.
The OA. All right. I'm writing it down.
It came out like 4 years ago or 5 years ago. It was a Netflix show. They did two seasons, and then Netflix, of course, canceled it because it was way too conscious. But in the first season, I'm not going to tell you too much now that I know that you haven't seen it, but like it's on that baptismal level. Like, it is baptism. And I'm really thinking, because like when I was doing the Wim Hof stuff, it was like, you're getting like, you're touching that death response. You're touching that, like, I don't
DMT's
know.
DMT's coming soon.
I don't know if I can go that much further. Like, I don't know if I want to go that much further. You know, like,
I think that's why people have a similar experience with certain psychedelics, depending on the trip that they have and what state of mind that they're in, if they're open to it. Because it's some sort of death.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, I've gotten eaten by the ayahuasca anaconda. I got eaten by her, I think, three times. Pretty sure three times, maybe a fourth time. Where that's annihilation. Like, she fucking ate me, and like I came out the other end like different.
Throwing up involved?
Of course. Oh, I've shit myself. I've the first time is really kind of funny, because it's a lot of fun when your bestie is like actually the guy who makes it. And because I'm a sympath, he would have me come into ceremonies to be the ground. And so I actually didn't like ceremonies all that much, because I was processing so much shit for people.
Mm.
But I really like doing it alone. Like, doing it alone and being in like really natural environments. And like, I told ayahuasca the first time I was with her, because I was tired of having a guru. I said, I will not idolize anything ever again.
Absolutely.
And I said, you have to prove to me that you're worth listening to. I literally told her that. And she's like, okay. And so I asked her to explain how I see. Like, what is it that I'm seeing, and how is it that I see? And she actually showed me exactly what I was experiencing and explained it fully. And so I was like, great, you're my science advisor. And then I went on to like shit and throw up all over my.
That's science for you.
I took a really big dose for my first time. That was a, as a, what's his name would say, that was a heroic dose.
Yeah.
No messing around. My boy, he's always like, you want some more? Always like, you want some more? Like, oh, gross.
We're partying tonight.
Ew, that is not a party. It's not my type of party. Yuck. Yeah, I'm. It's kind of funny because they've been talking to some locals around here because I think we'd be able to grow peyote here.
Ooh.
And peyote is like, I want that master plant around. I want that succulent around.
Oh, you know, it's funny because I wanted to ask you about peyote. Sorry, Sharon, I didn't mean to step over you, but I've heard you talk about it before on a podcast when it comes to injuries, like a physical injury.
Miraculous.
Is that what you're going to talk about, Sharon, or no?
No, I was just going to say, I've heard that ayahuasca is the mother and is the feminine, and peyote is the masculine version of these kind of two kind of.
Yeah. They technically call it in the forest, the abuelo and the abuelita.
Abuelita. Okay.
Yeah. So the little grandmother. But yeah, she's very talkative, and she essentially shows you the phenomenal plane by heightening all of your senses. So when you have that much DMT running through your system, you hear three times as much, you smell like five times as much, you have four times the visual acuity.
Oh, wow.
So your sensorial apparatus now is like, and you hear everything, and it's like, now you're what makes you throw up is you become aware of your parasites. Like you can actually start to smell the parasite.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's why it was, I think it was a God-given thing to the people in the jungles, because you're always exposed to nasty critters down there. So like I was like de-parasiting. You know, like I was like, why the last few years have I gained so much weight? It's because I haven't been doing any ayahuasca.
Interesting.
So I'm always touching critters and all this stuff. I'm full of parasites right now. And your body gains weight when you have parasites.
Go ahead.
Because it encapsulates them. But so with the ayahuasca, you can smell, like your sense of smell, and you can smell internal putrefaction. So all that stuff that you have undigested in your gut, it's like the fumes start to come up and you smell your own fumes in this fucking Hurl City. It's crazy. And that's why like a real, like if you're going to do it earnestly, like you go on a dieta for a month. They say no S's, no sugar, no salt, no sex.
Interesting. That whole state of mind reminds me. Have you ever read Wheel of Time? Are you familiar with that series? It's kind of like if you took Lord of the Rings and Dune in the best parts of Game of Thrones and put them together and did like a 13 book series on it. But certain characters are able to channel what's called the One Power. And while they're channeling, that's exactly what happens. They have heightened senses. They could see better. They could smell better. They can hear better. It's a great allegory for that, I guess. Just kind of blew my mind.
And that's a question I have too, because when I used to remote view, when I would be in the non-corporeal state, like when I'd be in the bi-located state, my senses were higher. So I don't even think senses are in the body. I don't think, because when my soul was in heaven, I had sensation. So I think we're taught all that. I mean, I've done a bunch of podcasts with people about flow state. I had a really cool thing done to me in the 90s. This is when they are first starting to get all this technology that they do for almost every pro athlete now, was they would like computer map us. And like they would check our heart rate variability, even though they didn't call it that. But they would see our biomechanics. And I did this whole commercial. Well, it wasn't a commercial. It was a demo for one of these machines for Michigan State University. So they put me in one of those green suits and I had all the dots on me. And they had me kicking a football. And they would have a screen in front of me and I'd have different inputs. And they could measure everything down to the millisecond. And now they can do this like just with regular GPS mapping and stuff like that. And dude, people are making movements, micro movements, and doing all these things like their heart rate's changing with before the physical, you know, stimulus.
Did you talk about this with Dr. Cowan?
Yeah.
Was it him? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was amazing. That was fascinating.
So I don't think the senses are internal. I don't think the senses are actually, excuse me, I don't think the senses are physical. I think the physical apparatus is sort of like the buffer zone for them. But I've been without body and have had my senses. So,
well, if you could take the analogy of kind of like the Matrix, right? Because everybody knows about the Matrix movies. And Neo's plugged into this pod and he's having this experience inside the Matrix and he can smell, taste, feel all these things. But really what's happening is there's just computer information, I guess, just being fed into different parts of his body so he can feel that. Now, if you just eliminate that interface and if we're not really like a person inside a vat of like liquid somewhere, like people somehow think with the whole simulation theory, right? So if that's not the case, but there's still just this interface going on somehow. Maybe it's not a physical thing, but we are able to still have those sensations in our brain. And maybe the way it works in the physical realm is just through our nose or our mouth or our eyes or our ears. But that information gets taken somehow and we experience it in our true self, like you're talking about the experiencer.
Hmm.
And it happens, like you were saying, it happens before what happens in the physical. Right. Like before the response, you're actually doing it. So I think that has to do with the fact that time isn't really real. You know, time isn't mm-hmm. linear. Space and time is fake. So it's kind of like a needle on a record. We're just a needle on a record at this point. And the record is already there. It's already been printed and sold and made mm-hmm. and you already have it. You mm-hmm. just don't realize it. And where you are, you're just at that needle point. And maybe because part of us is eternal, or, you know, we can have touch with our higher self or whatever, it knows already what's going to happen. And I kind of feel that's how intuition works, because a lot of times I'll have just these feelings about things and then they either happen or, you know, something really similar happens to it, or I'll be thinking of something and then the next day I see it. And if it works that same way with our senses, that's kind of mind blowing to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you.
Ladies, I was just going to say that earlier when you guys were talking about something, made me think of that guy who betrays them in the Matrix. And he's just like, I just want to have my steak, you know,
yeah.
He's just like tasting the steak. And like, you know, it was when we were talking about attachments, I think. So he was like attached to that, which wasn't even real in there. You know, it was this imagined reality, right? This simulated reality there, and he was tasting it, you know.
Yeah, Cypher, like, right? The bald guy.
Cypher.
Yeah.
What was he tasting, right? You know, yeah,
they were just all ones and zeros.
Yeah, right? So that gets back to Hermeticism, all his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the model of the quote unquote physical as being the physical plane of inertia. Because people get the term inertia and momentum mixed up.
Mm.
Inertia means something that's slow, something that doesn't want to move, something that's at rest and wants to remain at rest, has that positive inertia. So here is, I think this plane is the plane of like our spiritual inertia. And like heaven, eternity is actually where there is the real movement. That's where there is the actual choice.
Well, that would make sense because we're slowed down. If we're energy,
exactly,
we're slowed down and we have this physical experience because we slow down. Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're created so that God could know this plane of existence. Like God could actually see shit slow.
He can slow it down.
Well, he like is like, okay, boom, infinity created it. Boop. I know it, but I only know it from my perspective. But I don't want to be bored because I'm infinite. So let me give subjectivity to my creation so I can actually experience it in infinite amount of ways. That's why we're at, we're like God, you know, very, this, I'm not, don't mean to be blasphemous, but we're like God's like little spies.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
We're just like remote viewing for God down here. You're like, whoa, dude, cool. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I always would say we're kind of like characters in like if Lord of the Rings, right? We're like Frodo or whatever. This, we're not actually Tolkien, but we kind of are part of Tolkien because Tolkien is Frodo, but he's, but is Frodo really Tolkien? It's kind of like one of those. What were we going to say, Sharon? No, go ahead.
You stopped my mind. Is Frodo really Tolkien?
Tolkien is Frodo, but is Frodo Tolkien? All right, everybody, that's our show. No.
Einhorn is Finkel. Yeah, Finkel is Einhorn.
Exactly. That's a reference to Pet Ben, Ace Ventura Pet Detective, Sharon, if you haven't seen
it. I know, I saw that.
Oh, you did?
Recently. I mean, I'd seen it a long time ago, but yeah.
I was a freshman in college as a field goal kicker. So, you know, all my friends were like, Gardner is Einhorn. Einhorn.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. The timing is perfect for that.
I mean, that's the funniest thing about that movie is about a demented kicker.
That's funny.
You got something you want to tell about? Tell us about there, Topher?
All of us kickers were fucking demented, bro. It's true. It's true. There is no mystery in that one.
Oh, that's great. Full circle.
I just thought of it. It made me think of like the higher self, God, whatever, is kind of feeding us those little like, hey, this is about to happen. And that's how we get those, that intuition and those nudges of, and our bodies like, start responding even before something actually happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like the more you listen to it, the more you become, you know, in line with it. Right. And you have a better life. I feel like, I mean, I know I have much better life than I did when I was younger, but now that I've listened more to my intuition and I try to quiet myself and not always get lost in random thoughts. Sometimes it's fun to get lost in thought and go all over the place and you can be very creative, but then sometimes the thoughts can be detrimental, right? I mean, think about how many people have issues, like they call it mental illness these days, right? They just label everything a mental illness. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like it really is just an overactive brain. But when you could slow that down, that intuition starts to flow and you can really flow with it. Like I just said the word flow, right? It's perfect. Like you talk about with water, it's the same kind of thing. You're just going with the flow. Mm-hmm.
Trust is the ultimate virtue. I don't even know if it's a virtue. It's the ultimate way to get into the flow state. Like you won't ever have a nervous Nilly or somebody that is, you know, paranoid or whatever. They don't get into flow states.
Exactly.
But when you trust, like in like that whole prayer, I rest in God. Like I actually like I know I can only rest in God. Like I like when I whenever there's anxiety or fear, like I love that in Dune, like you know, fear is the mind killer. Mm. Like it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually gotten down, like, now that I've met enough people that get scared in situations that I don't, and then I audit when I get scared, I find that the only time I get scared is when I'm not aware of options. So once again, we're at the wrong identification. Like, to wrap this up, like, you know, the whole thing with the Oracle of Delphi, you know, the know thyself is one side of it, but then certainty is the road to ruin is the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the way that can be tied to the feeling of fear, like, really audit yourself the next time you're scared or you're afraid or you're anxious. You're anxious because you think the whatever is presenting itself is the only option.
Fear of the what I've known.
No, that's not it. No. That's no. This is one layer deeper than that. So I'll put it this way. I would give a situation to, like, say some employees of mine. They would react with fear and anxiety. But they're acting out of fear and anxiety because they're not aware of as many options as I am. The second I explain alternatives and other options, they're no longer scared. When I internally audit and see when I feel anxious, I get anxious because there's an actual identification, a wrong identification, a certainty that what's being presented is what's so, and that's it.
Oh, the only option.
The only option. And it's not true. And it's the identification with something that isn't that leads to psychopathy. I just got done reading all of Norberto Kepi's stuff. I just got done reading. This is the third book of his that I read. Psychopathy and Exorcism.
Interesting.
Did you guys listen to the pod I did with one of his students, Cesar Saus?
No,
but I will.
Oh my god,
this is so interesting.
So in that book, he wrote this whole treatise in like the 70s about physics as we're taught is inverted, which we now know, like all of us on the internet in these realms, like we know. they took the ether out of physics. They made everything a billiard ball, particleized everything, total BS. So he was figuring this out in the 70s, but he was a psychotherapist. And he is like, he inverted their inversion. And in Brazil, there's this whole company that's built around the original ether physics, which he re-found out in the 70s. And they build these very high, the most efficient motors in the world, because they use the original technology from the early 1900s. But it took a psychotherapist to figure it out. And he surmises that the soul that is supposedly choosing that which isn't real is actually choosing its own destruction. So that's the soul, like, it, when you boil everything down. So somebody that consistently chooses a paradox or a lie or chooses something that isn't, at a soul level, they're choosing to diminish, to completely go away. And that will pathologize and turn somebody into a psychopath. It will actually pathologize, and it will actually create a void that will draw in these demons, demonic entities. And these demonic entities want nothing more for you than for you to be void of your birthright so that they can occupy the space that you occupy. They want you as a condo.
Yeah.
And it's fucking incredible. It's so simple, but he goes through it much more eloquently than I am right now because I'm just surmising it. But that's like, yeah, that's as good as you can put it.
It's funny too, because the behaviors that somebody exhibits when they're doing this are also destructive too. So it's like they're slowly killing themselves.
Yes, this is so true. And it's because that wants your energy state to be lower and lower and lower and lower, because once again, the only problem we have is lack of energy. If you don't have enough energy for your force field, guess what? So this is like where nothing builds a force field more than trust, like really trusting, like trusting God, like not trusting man, but like, hey, if God wanted this to happen, then it was supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. If God didn't want something to happen and I wanted to happen, could it happen? And like, let that like gnaw on you for a bit.
Yeah.
Like really let it gnaw on you.
I love that. That gives me a lot of it. For me, what you just said helps eliminate any fear. Like it actually builds trust.
Yeah.
For me.
We're supposed to be here, right? Like I almost died in like 2008. I told the story several times. I got swept out by an undertow when I was at Ocean City. And, you know, I had this moment where I was like, is this it? You know, I started to panic because I'm actually a really good swimmer, but the waves were over my head and I couldn't touch bottom anymore. So I was basically just treading water. And I got water in my mouth a couple times. And I said to myself, I'm like, is this it? I started to panic. And I was like, well, if I panic, I know that is it. Then I'm done. I just got to keep doing what I'm doing. And I did do it. But I could have even asked myself at that time, if I started to panic, panic is nothing more than like, oh, no, why me? Why is this happening? This shouldn't be happening. But instead, I could have just had, or I did kind of had the faith without knowing it, that this is part of God's plan. There's a reason this is happening. And I'm going to do my best. And if I drown, then that was what was supposed to be. What am I going to do? You know, like I'm only one man. But yeah, I love that whole thing because it always happens when something or that the thought process that people go through when something happens to them a lot in the society is first is like,
something
why me?
Happens to them.
Yeah. Or why is this or why, you know, this isn't what I want to happen. But it's like, well, maybe there's a higher power.
It's not happening to show you. It's happening for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Why is then you could it's all in the language, right? How we speak. It is exactly what's happening for me. So now when things happen, I try to look on the bright side or the silver lining or what can I learn from this that's going on.
Absolutely.
Over, you know, like I had this 2003 Chevy Tahoe, the Z71 that I loved. I took it all over the country. And last year I got hit. Some guy hit me and they totaled it. It wasn't even that bad, but it was, you know, it's older, whatever. And everybody was like, oh, aren't you bummed out that you lost that truck? And the used car prices were like insane. If I wanted to replace it, I couldn't even, you know, and plus everything in here in Connecticut is just rusted out. So everybody though was like, oh, aren't you so upset? And I was like, I don't know, man, I guess I'm just going to be on to the next chapter of my life. You know, like we're going to see what happens now. And now I drive a 92 Buick Century that I bought. Yeah. It only had 68,000 miles, you know, but it's, I don't know. It's just a different experience. So
it's a couch.
Yeah, it's like driving a couch around. But, and I'm like, what can I learn from this? You know, what new experiences? And it's brought me to a bunch of different new experiences, you know, so.
Damn boomer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's what I feel like, exactly. And my initials are BJ, because I'm Brandon John Smith.
Nice.
I'm a BJ in a Buick, literally.
That's perfect.
Oh my God.
Just laid back. You got that, like, you got those long arms. You're just like.
Sofa.
I could sit in the back seat, like Hightower Police Academy, you know. Like,
just cock diesel. Just like, what?
Pumping my, what's the guy, Born to Roll? I can't even think of the rapper. He used to just make music for driving around because it was so loud.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's so fun.
But yeah, that's really what it comes down to, right? Every day. And I try to tell people, but like you said, you can't tell people this stuff. They have to experience it for themselves. But it really is just a day by day decision. Just, you know, how are you going to take things that happen to you? And what are you going to do with it? Or happen
there? There's a great book for people to read. It's called Vagabonding.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
And I was very lucky to read it before my first Saturn return. And so before I was 28, for people out there that don't know what that means. In Vagabonding, the author had this great line in it. He goes, "You want to travel as if you were an irrational flaneur." And I will always remember that term. So you're irrational. You don't have a plan. And a flaneur is in France, it's somebody who's led by their nose.
Spell it. Can you remember how to spell it?
I think it was F-L-A-N-E-U-R, flaneur.
Okay.
Like a fool, right?
Maybe.
Like, well, I'm just thinking like the fool card where you just walk around kind of like, yeah, let's see what happens.
Because there's a beauty to the trust.
Yeah.
There is a beauty because you trust. It's like, you know, being Aries, like you fucking, you know, leap before you look. There's just like this whole thing of like, I'm doing it. And in that book, Vagabonding, when I read it, it made so much sense because what my life experience had showed me was I've gotten everything I ever wanted and wasn't happy.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But what did make me happy, and I was blessed to have this level of cognition, was the surprises of my life, actually the things I didn't plan, the things I had no idea that were going to happen, actually were vivifying for me. So what a fucking indictment on the ego. Oh, I'm going to plan. I'm going to do this. I'm going to conquer. Exactly. I'm going to. And you get it, and you're like, oh, whatever. And then I let all of that go. It just like trust. And dude, life couldn't be better because I don't know what the fuck's. I don't know what's next.
Exactly.
I am here.
Yeah, it's funny. Elizabeth, who's my woman, and I were having this conversation because we decided, I think it was in September, that we wanted to get married, and we had this plan to do it next year. So we told people, now everyone's asking us, oh, when are you getting married? What's the plan? And we're just like, we're not really sure yet. You know, we're just going to figure it out. And people just, and it's funny because I'm a wedding DJ. So you'd think,
I know.
But like, you know, I'm just like, I don't know. I know it's what I want to happen, and we both want it to happen, and it will happen. But, you know, everyone else with their plans. And I've always been that way, or for a while, because I would go on a lot of different like road trips and stuff, and we'd plan out the hotel. But this one time, I don't even remember what it was. We just went somewhere. I think it was Myrtle Beach or something. And we were just looking for hotels. We went hotel to hotel instead of getting reservations. And now I do that. Well, I mean, now I Airbnb a lot, but I just do that when I go to a place. I'm like, oh, we want to go here. Let's just get there and see what's available, because you get the best deals. You never know where you're going to find. Yeah. You know, it's just amazing. You meet all kinds of people.
It's awesome.
Fear, right? It has a lot to do with fear. It's like people are staying. They want to have their reservation. They want to know where they got to go, where they got to be, when they can have fun on vacation and stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's so gay. I'm totally the other way. I've had such wonderful experiences of like, hey, c'est la vie. Let's see. Let's just kind of, because you're right. Like there's in the moment with your locus, your body, like being there and stuff like that. I've told this story before, so I'll keep it really brief, but like I was 24 and my girlfriend and I went out to the Grand Canyon, and I love the Grand Canyon. And we hiked down this valley that we weren't supposed to. we made love. We're coming back up out of the valley, and this huge truck pulls up, bus, with all these geriatric folk coming out of it. And they walked to the side where the rail was. Most of them were holding on because they didn't have good balance. Some took some photos. And like within 5-10 minutes, they were back on the bus and left. And my girlfriend and I at the time, we were like in the Grand Canyon. We're like, how can you do that? How can you come here and literally have like a snapshot? like you didn't experience any, and this is like literally like the most beautiful place on the planet. Like it's so, like it's awe-inspiringly beautiful. And it was like they didn't even have the senses within them. Like there was like just like it was on the tour. And I think like a year later I read the book Vagabonding. And I was like, I'm never gonna be that. I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna travel and do all these things while I have my senses and while I can enjoy them. And I'm not gonna do it on somebody. I'm never gonna take a cruise. I'm not gonna be on one of these buses. That's not the way I'm wired, you know? So folks, I got to get running here. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, we can wrap it up. Sure. This has been a...
Did you tell us everything you wanted to tell us?
You tell me. Did I answer your questions about the Oracle of Delphi?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you got everything in that you wanted to, and I'll just go back and review it again, and we can always talk again. But I feel, again, like we were talking about with the reservations and the plans, right? We make these plans for what we want to talk about. And then me, Sharon, and I are the same way. We just let it happen. So
awesome.
Yeah, I think this was a great conversation. Thank you again so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we look forward to having some more mind-blowing conversations with you in the future.
That'd be awesome. You guys are so much fun.
Thank you. Yeah, so likewise. I feel the same about you. It's great. And I just want to let everyone know, check out our series on the Tao. We've been doing an in-depth series on the Tao. We have four different versions of the Tao Te Ching. And we cover each verse, four different versions, and give our own commentary and what we learned on it. So check that out in the Oversharon Show. We actually even have our own folder for that on YouTube, our own playlist. And we'll put a link to that below. Is there anything you want to talk about for like plugs or where people can find you and all that stuff, Chris?
Go to topherhq.com. I have a few products now that I'm selling. I'm selling biochar. I'm selling rocket mass heaters and the Mayu Swirl. You know, my podcast, Biocharisma Podcast, I think we're on all the RSS feeds. I'm pretty sure. And if you want to see that visually, you can see that on my website. You can see it on BitChute. We're going to start posting to Rumble. But yeah, I think now we have, you know, close to 55 pods in. So that's pretty good.
Awesome. Well, we just this year we hit over our 200th episode, or no, I'm sorry, our 100th episode.
Awesome. So,
yeah, we're really excited about that. Yeah, everybody, check out his stuff. And if you are new to the Oversharon Show, thank you guys so much for coming to check us out. Check out our stuff. If you like what we're talking about here, you'll love it, because most of these topics we've talked about over the past 100 and something episodes of this show. The best way to find us is morelawsmoreproblems.com. That's my website I've had now for about 10 years. Click on the Oversharon tab, everything you need there. It's Brandon Bonanza on YouTube, and we do have an audio podcast form through Podbean, which puts us all at the RSS feed. So just look for the Oversharon Show there. And we want to give a big shout out to our chat. They're here every Thursday when we premiere these. I'm sorry if we're not live. This one is pre-recorded. So thank you guys for the chat for hanging out. If you want to support us, that's the best way. Just come hang out in the chat and subscribe, like all that fun stuff. And I will say, as we do at the end of every show, what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That once you start over Sharon,
then you totally stop being a Karen.
That's right.
That's right. And we're not telling you how to live.
But maybe how to live a little more simply, perhaps.
That's right. All right, guys. If I could find out how to, I have to make my thing bigger to find out how to end this. They keep switching the buttons on Zoom.
Yeah. Stop updating it, Brandon.
There it is. I don't update anything. All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week. See you later. Bye.